I'm going to suggest that you might want to take what my guest this evening has to say with a sizable grain of salt. Storyteller Paul Strickland revels in tall tales and big fibs. In fact, they're the fuel that have driven his performances at Cincinnati Fringe Festivals in 2013, 14, and 15. He describes the fanciful residents of the Big Fib cul-de-sac trailer park, portraying them with colorful anecdotes, wordplay, and original music. Paul's a relatively new resident of Greater Cincinnati. Actually, he's living in Covington. And he's been drawn here by our creative atmosphere. So thanks for stopping by, Paul.
I'm glad I did.
I first encountered you during a Fringe Festival in 2013. It was a sweaty storefront over on Main Street in Over the Rhine, and you were telling stories in a show called Ain't True and Uncle False. Tell us a little bit about the origins of those folks and the trailer park where they hang out.
Sure. So Ain't True and Uncle False came about as a failed attempt at a novel originally. Basically what happened was I was living in Nashville at the time for the second time and was sort of in the midst of some family problems and decided to create my own. And it all really began from a single idea, which was that there was a factory in a town where people punch peas to make them black-eyed. And then based on that, the whole rest of the thing grew.
And the characters all have amusing names and even more complex personal stories behind them.
Right.
Just give us a real quick sketch of Ain't True and Uncle False.
Yeah, well, Ain't True and Uncle False are actually, they're my personal family and my connection to the rest of the trailer park. So strangely enough, they don't have the sort of extensive backstory that everyone else does, because my experience of everyone else at the trailer park is from the stories that Ain't True and Uncle False tell me.
Well, so your tales about Big Fib Trailer Park, cul-de-sac, all of that are the product of your fertile imagination, but they're also the product maybe of some of your growing up in life.
Yeah, I grew up in a trailer park, and I've always been a very large fan of sort of magical realism and those sorts of tall tales from the South. I grew up in the Gulf Coast of Florida, but we grew up in a part of Pensacola that was definitely very much more Alabama. So that's what I usually say, is I grew up in a small Alabama town called Pensacola, Florida. My grandfather was a very well-known man in certain circles, but the older I've gotten and the more I've looked into it, the more I've found that I have no idea how many of those stories are actually true or not at this point. So all of that sort of came together at the same time for me, and I was really wanting to explore the way in which we tell stories to one another as a way to be more true than factual. My grandfather is this giant in my life, and it turns out I have no idea who that man was. But I can tell you all about him based on these stories that family has told me.
So he was a sort of a role model storyteller for you?
Yeah, he was.
Maybe not intentionally so.
Well, and maybe so. I mean, I don't know. He was around till I was 15. He was a professional musician, and he was a Southern gospel musician and preacher. The line I always use is that he was a full-time preacher about half the time. And that's very true. I mean, he traveled around the country when he was in his 50s and 60s, singing at Southern gospel tent revivals and things of that nature. And he made a living passing the hat. So I reckon I ended up doing something a little similar, right?
Your path to this set of activities, though, wasn't exactly a straight one. You set off to train to be a singer, among other things, and not a singer of folk songs.
No, I graduated from high school, and then I went to college at UNC Greensboro in North Carolina to study opera. And so I sang for a while and did a lot of oratorio and recital work. And then I got married and moved to Nashville and tried to crack into the songwriting world there. And that didn't work out so well, both because I was too young and immature to understand how that industry works and because the industry changed before my eyes while I was there. I got there as Taylor Swift became a thing, and she changed the industry in a way that is very good for some folk, but for a guy like me that writes sort of folk-based country blues songs, it's not okay. So then I started doing stand-up comedy in Nashville and got on the road. And then while I was on the road, met a fellow named Kevin Thornton, who told me about these things called Fringe Festivals, where I could write theater and produce it myself. So I raised a little bit of money and did a few shows, and that's sort of how I walked backwards into my present career.
I suspect Kevin was someone who told you about Cincinnati, because he's been here for a number of the
fringes. Kevin was the one that told me about Cincinnati. Kevin and I actually, strangely enough, we met in Nashville years before either of us did a Fringe Festival. He was a bartender at a place where I was doing a show.
Well, let's talk about Fringe Festivals, because that's become a big piece of your life these days. It is where you've sort of honed the craft that you're really focused on these days, although I know stand-up is still maybe how you pay the bills mm-hmm. and do that sort of thing. But you came here 3 years ago to do a Fringe and liked it, and came back another year and liked it enough that, well, you moved to town. Can you talk a little bit about why you decided to anchor your life and your work here?
Yeah, I mean, you go where people are interested, I reckon. I found that here in Cincinnati, audiences are curious and not quick to dismiss. And those are the two things I ask of people. So a lot of my songs, you know, they don't quite necessarily get around to what the real point is immediately. And certainly my stories, you know, have a tendency to, because they're stories that are about the sort of shaky nature of truth, a lot of times you can't follow them quickly, but they all kind of come together at the end. Cincinnati audiences are really supportive in that way. They want to hear the whole story. And I think, and this is maybe projecting, but my experience has been that in Cincinnati, like a couple of other places, Minneapolis, I've had the same experience. Audiences will listen and be engaged and then make decisions about it later, which is great. I've always considered the best art to be art that's conversation piece.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've created some great conversations. Your second Fringe show was Papa Squat's Store of Sorts, and that one did very well. And then just this past June, Tales Too Tall for Trailers, which you continue to take around to Fringes elsewhere. So those are doing very well. And then you got some experience through No Theater, who puts the Fringe on, with a series that they did called Serials, and a show that you created for that, which was produced in 15-minute chunks called Andy's House of Blank, and blank is in square brackets for those of you who want to know. And that is going to become a full-fledged stage production at No Theater this fall.
Yeah.
Can you tell folks a little bit about that?
Sure. Andy's House of Blank. So Trey Tatum, who is a playwright here in town, and I became friends, and we were talking one night over in Covington at Wonder Bar, just hanging out and talking about writing a musical together for the Serials production. And I said, I have always wanted to write something about an oddity shop. And he said, well, I've always wanted to write something about a machine that loops time. And I said, well, let's just do that at the same time. Let's do it. Yeah, so Andy's House of Blank is basically about this man who owns a shop of oddities in Floralla, Alabama. Trey and I grew up, literally, we actually did grow up 45 miles apart from each other. So it is the story of our first summer job at Andy's House of, where a lady brings in a machine that loops time. And then she has an unfortunate set of circumstances that that loop contains. It's the story of Andy trying desperately to change destiny.
That show is going to be on stage at No Theater from October 30th to November 14th. So listeners, put that on your schedule for this fall. You like to make people laugh at themselves, at the characters who you describe, so your presentations are always entertaining, but as I think you've said, they always want to have a little bit of truth behind them. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about maybe some of the insights that you try to convey in the stories that you tell.
Yeah, I mean, I think specifically with the storytelling work that I do, I try to always start with a character that I think on the surface a lot of people would maybe dismiss. And I find that most truths are very simple. And so it doesn't seem strange to me that people that seem simple would contain some of those truths. So, for example, in Ain't True and Uncle Faults, there's a young fellow named Will Purger who loses his left hand. And not because of anything tragic. He just lays his left hand down and walks away when he's 7 years old, because 7-year-olds lose things. And what ends up happening then, the consequence of that is that he can't be a pea puncher like his grandfather. And so the story of Ain't True and Uncle Faults is the way in which Will Purger finds some way to save the pea punching plant without actually being able to punch peas the way his grandfather did. And so it's a story about overcoming what is a set of expectations. And this is something I think we all deal with, the family we're born into as opposed to the ones we choose. The family we're born into has a certain set of expectations on us before we even know what the word expectations mean. And I think depending on the family and the person, that can become a very hard thing. It's certainly been the major obstacle for me growing up psychologically, was living in the shadow of my grandfather.
Well, those of you who are listening, if the concept of storytelling is interesting to you, perhaps you have it within you to become a storyteller. And Paul is offering tips to folks through workshops that he occasionally presents. There will be one coming up sometime later this fall. Do you want to say anything more quickly about that?
Sure, yeah. In November, definitely, I'll be offering a storytelling workshop. And what we basically do is, instead of me doing sort of a long lecture on my feelings about storytelling, I take the ideas that you want and I sort of save you some time. If you wanted to write stories and wanted to spend 6 months sort of editing yourself over and over again and then going away from it and then coming back to it again, you would get something similar to what you get from my workshop in 4 sessions. But what I'm really ultimately doing is helping you tune out the voices in your head that are telling the story to go in a direction that it doesn't really want to go.
Okay. All right. Well, my guest this evening has been storyteller Paul Strickland. It's always a blast to talk to you, and that's no fib.
Thanks, Rick.
Okay. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Rick Pender.
Mom and Dad are past and gone, and we sold our little home. We'll never hear another rooster crowing around the door. Still my memory echoes with the sound and a smile when I'm alone in the memory of our peaceful country home. Mother would sing as she does the morning chores. Her pretty voice drifts o'er to me from the open kitchen door. Now wherever I may roam, I will never be alone in the memory of our peaceful country home.